U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, let's declare it the weekend. It is Friday afternoon. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Tom Gimbel will be along a little bit later from LaSalle Network, right? And Tom's going to talk about, I'm trying to find the exact phrase, but Andrea Haines is here from the Chicago Tribune. Andrea, welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
It's not degree inflation, but is that it? Now, more and more jobs are requiring degrees when you don't really need a degree to do the job. Fascinating thing. So we'll talk to Gimbel about that a little bit later. Also, a program to get more baby boomers involved in innovation to match boomers up with the younger innovators in the area. That's in the second half hour. Andrea is in the studio. Of course, she's the editor at Blue Sky Innovation and joins us to talk. We've got some big tech news today, right? Salesforce.
We kind of knew
it was coming, right?
Last time you and I talked, and there may have been developments after that, but you know, the sign was a holdup because
right.
Salesforce wanted to have this giant sign, but they were going to be bringing jobs. So I know you and I batted that around a little bit a month or two ago.
Just over my right shoulder and down the river is Trump Tower with the big fat Trump on it. And the city council actually passed an ordinance, right, to keep other things like that from happening.
Yes, the giant sign on Trump Tower did scare people off a little bit.
Salesforce is known for, they're moving into buildings and putting big Salesforce signs on their building. So this was a bit of a dilemma, I would imagine, for the administration. It's 1,000 jobs, but they had to swallow the ordinance.
Yes, so they're getting their sign, and they are coming to Wolf Point, so over by the Merchandise Mart. Excuse me. So they will have, you know, hopefully more than 1,000 jobs, but in the first round, which I believe is by 2023, they will be adding 1,000 jobs, and they already have about 1,400 employees here
right.
in Chicago.
So what does Salesforce do exactly? Software for other companies?
Yes, for basically managing your sales contacts, things like that. So it's a fast-growing, maybe almost infinite-growing business, it looks like.
Right.
You know, kind of everybody needs that.
And the building is still going to go up. It's not been built yet. But the Wolf Point Tower, there are two there now, right? This will be the third one.
Yeah, so they'll have a ton of space down there. And they're also known for opening up their space to other people,
right.
to philanthropic groups. They really are, they're a progressive company. At least that's their thing. And they are already, you know, making noise about things like that, too.
I love what they do, too. They don't put a cafeteria in their building. Explain why.
Yeah, so they do a couple things to encourage this, you know, this group that they'll be bringing in, this large number of employees, to actually support the local businesses. So hopefully all those employees won't be locked up inside Salesforce Tower. They will be out spending money at the, you know, every place, right? The restaurants and
yeah.
other businesses that are around there. So hopefully that has a good effect on the whole little neighborhood.
I guess it'd be kind of a drag if you only had 10 minutes to grab some food, but the idea is no cafeteria, so you're going to go out in the neighborhood and help those businesses. They also don't have a gym in their building, but they'll give... they'll
like
reimburse people for
yeah, exactly.
to go to other clubs. All right, cool. So that's Salesforce, and they broke the news today, and they'll move in about, what, 4 years?
Yes, that's what it sounds like. Yeah, it's funny because it seems so exciting and immediate, and then it's like, oh, you have to wait, but
you've
know, that time will fly,
build the building
right?
first, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so there's that. I was talking with Bill and Wendy about Cyber Monday and returns, and you guys had a great story about this warehouse. What's the name of the company now?
Yeah, it's called Liquidation.com.
Liquidation.com, where they just, a lot of these things that we return don't even go back to the people we bought them from?
Yeah, it's interesting. So they work with companies like Amazon, Home Depot, Bed Bath & Beyond, places that we probably all shop. So things that get returned there can wind up in these liquidation bundles that people or businesses can then purchase. And there's kind of like a mystery around it because you're getting a mystery bundle of returned items.
So if I were to return my jacket to Lululemon, I wouldn't buy one. We're talking off the air about Lululemon. But if I were to return a jacket to somewhere I bought on Amazon, Amazon might say, we're not going to be able to resell it. It's not worth it to us. So we're going to send it to Texas. And then that jacket would be bundled with other, what, outerwear or pieces of clothing or things like that.
Yeah, it can be all kinds of things. In some cases, it is electronics, which can be, in some cases, refurbished. It sounds like not always. You know, sometimes it may just go into a pallet. It's kind of interesting. Well, they do some preliminary sorting and, you know, trying to make sure that decent things get in there.
Can we do this? Can we just bid in one right now? Is it something we can do?
You can. There's a consumer aspect to it. There's also a business-to-business aspect. And one of the things that people are doing is some of the YouTube stars are getting them and doing these big dramatic unboxings on YouTube. But it's a lot of items. The story says last holiday season, 28% of gifts purchased wound up being returned. That's a
really?
Lot.
Really? 28%? One in
That's
four.
That's a lot. And you can imagine that creating a lot of waste, you know?
Yeah, a lot of waste. Okay, so there's that. Oh, you know what I would never return? I would never return my Billy Mouth. What is it?
I know. So my Christmas shopping for Steve is definitely done because the Big Mouth Billy Bass, which, you know, is the singing fish trophy.
Right.
And I'm going to try not to say Big Mouth Billy Bass too many times in a
row.
Well,
there's two times.
That's two times perfect. I'm not going to go for three.
Okay. I'm going
to
get you to say it.
The kitschy fish that we all know and love is now being able to be controlled by Alexa.
So what does that mean?
So you can give commands to it. And when you plug it in, it apparently says, woohoo, that feels good.
Well, tell me again. I didn't hear that. I'm sorry. I wasn't listening. What does it say?
I can't say that again either. I've got too many tests here. Like the original, it includes a song, Fishing Time.
Uh-huh.
You mount it on the wall. And for $40, which you and I agree is
a lot
for a novelty gift,
right.
You now have like the tech-connected novelty gift.
Because, you know, there are people for whom you buy gifts and, you know, you want to give them a gift, but you also realize that the gift basically is for the moment you open it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
I want to give you something. I'm not going to find something you're going to use for the next 10 years. There are those people. And so, Bill, what is it?
Big Mouth Billy Bass.
Scored. Okay. So that would be one of those gifts, but I don't think I'd drop it for $40. I think that's a little too much for me.
Yeah, it's a lot.
All right, Andrea Haynes, listen, thank you for coming by and indulging me with the Big Mouth Billy Bass.
Yes, this was fun. We'll see if one lands under your tree or on your desk this year.
What's in Red Eye this weekend?
So Red Eye is all holiday stuff. So there's like holiday stuff galore.
Nice.
Really all month long. So,
you ever roast chestnuts?
You ever roast stuff? There's all kinds of holiday stuff to be doing. So it's a hot, hot month for Red Eye.
You ever roast your own chestnuts?
I have not.
I did that once. It's family lore now.
I bet it smells good. Or did they not if you burn them or something?
No, it was just hard to scrape them off the oven walls after they exploded.
Oh, goodness.
That was it.
Yeah.
We'll talk next week. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, here on 720 WGN. Tom Gimbel is on the phone line from LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
It's always good to be with you, sir.
Hey, listen, so I don't know if you heard, I just was reading a commercial for Freeway Ford, and they talked about how because of demand, they're hiring diesel techs. And I think in a weird way, that's kind of what we're about to start talking about.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's such an interesting dilemma of what's going on in the marketplace of people being taught skills and not handed degrees is kind of the theory that we're going into, and that it's not about having a college degree, it's about finding jobs that you're passionate about, and then where the jobs are. And being disgruntled in a quote-unquote good office job versus being happy in a trade job, it's really an interesting intersection we're at today.
And so I'm interested, too, in this idea of degree inflation, and you sent along an article. Let me just read from it. More than 6 million good-paying jobs in the U.S. are at risk of degree inflation. The idea is that jobs now require, you fill out an application form, and it says, you know, it requires a bachelor's degree. But the fact is, you don't need a bachelor's degree to do the job. And further, many of the people who are doing the job today, the people who are getting ready to retire, they don't have bachelor degrees. But when you saddle a requirement like that, it really hurts people on the bottom, right? It sort of reduces the ability of social mobility or the ability to move up in society.
Well, the problem is when companies are hiring for positions, they have to put some sort of minimum requirement or else they get flooded with applications. And if you get 1,000 applications for one job internally going through the hiring process, you can't sort through them all. You can't find the people.
Okay.
So you've got to create some sort of process to eliminate certain parts of the population. And it's not discrimination. It's just saying there's got to be a way, you know, if you put no degree necessary, then you get people who dropped out of high school. You get people who have no relevant experience,
right,
and different things. So, you know, it's companies really trying to also have some mode of efficiency as well.
Well, that's interesting. Then, so what would be is there an alternative? I mean, I don't know what it would be if you could ask for something else.
Well, that's the interesting thing is you know the apprenticeships that exist within the trade schools is a place where you can go and quote unquote kind of pick an apple off the tree versus taking one out of the barrel. And I think there is that sense, but whether it's truck drivers, whether it's mechanics, whether it's in the IT space and it's developers, whether it's retail positions, it's really coming across. Degree is not necessary, but presentation is necessary. How you communicate is necessary, and there are certain skills that are still lacking that people don't have. And so, you know, it's kind of the death of the liberal arts education and going and taking classes at the community college, some sort of secondary education that helps develop people in their communication style is not a negative.
So what are you telling me then? That the degree is a good idea, but maybe some of the degrees are focused too much on the numbers and not enough on the people?
Yes, I would say that's 100% what I'm saying. And, okay. And people have to realize, what do they want to accomplish in their life? Why don't they want to go to school? What do they enjoy doing? And the hardest part is to be a functional technician, blue collar or white collar, right? White collar maybe being a developer or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of times when you move into management, there is a different set of skills than the technical side of it. And that is what people are lacking when they don't go to college.
I see, right.
So you can be a strong technician without a degree. It's hard to be an executive or a leader without a degree unless you innately have those skills.
You know, just getting back one more time to going to a trade school rather than a university or college, though, the tough part of that is, and it can be a very wise decision, it seems like in your mind, if you're going to go to a college, that your possibilities are much greater. Right? Your world is much wider than if you choose a trade and go to a trade school, and that probably keeps people from doing that.
Yes. And the age-old thing is they're you know, over the past 20 or 30 years, it's changed a lot. But a lot of times, going back before that, kids would graduate high school and they're like, I don't want to go to school anymore.
Right.
And society's changed over 30 years where now, you know, people think you have to go or you want to go and it's fun and there's these concepts of that. But it used to be 30, 40 years ago, people made their kids go to college when they didn't want to because they thought they'd just wander the world and do nothing. In the age of technology and gig work and things like that, there are other options, but you've got to answer this fundamental question. Why do you want to go to college?
So to sum,
why?
To sum,
and that's the answer.
To sum up, then, you're saying that too many jobs are requiring degrees and too many degrees are coming out without the soft skills to fulfill the job requirements.
Yes, there should actually be some sort of trade school for soft skills and communication development.
I think you just came upon our million-dollar idea. Let's make it a $2 million idea, Tom. Let's do that. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. That would be a sitcom.
I'm in.
Have a great weekend. We'll talk again soon.
You too.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio this afternoon, and joining me now is Tim Roach, the CEO of Lender. You hear me talk about Lender just about every day, I think. Tim, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Okay,
good to be back.
So, you know, it was all big shopping weekend last weekend, and I guess all week this week. People are planning for their holidays, but at this time of year, if you're a business owner, I mean, is this a big planning time for next year? Should the planning have been done, or what are we doing at the end of the year?
I think it is a great planning, and yes, Cyber Monday was a big hit.
Is there you got that? I like your pull over.
I did.
There.
I just thought, ordered online. I helped to grow the economy as well. The planning is really important, and I think a lot of people, you know, you don't want to miss the ability to finish out the fourth quarter strong. Obviously, if you need additional working capital, that's what we're here for. But the real big picture is making sure you're planning for next year,
right.
A true strategic planning. And I always back into Q4, Q3, Q2, and Q1, because if Q1 actually hits, it's typical that the rest of the year will go your way. So I really try to make sure our business owners are planning for the full year next year, not just the first quarter.
So right. So if you're not looking ahead fully, then if you're flat on Q1, you're not gonna bounce back.
Correct.
So I want to talk about the funding and what you do, but I also read that you're expanding a little bit and that more, because we've talked about, you've had seminars and things like that. You're interested in teaching these business owners, right? If they're in need of credit, to find ways to escape that in the future.
Absolutely.
And I know you're sort of expanding what you're doing that way too.
Yeah, we're trying to look at a suite of financial services for the business owner. So we've recently partnered with an insurance company, a CPA firm, as well as a tax service that will actually help the business owner understand if they're having a tax implication, understand their finances, understanding where their expenses are, if they can write off all of their interest expense, which they can. So we're trying to basically create a full service for our clients so they don't need to go to five or six other places. They can come to us, talk with us, and we can put them in the right direction and partner with one of our other partners.
And they don't need to go find them. I mean, I think... I run a teeny tiny business, but I think, you know I have the questions, but I don't always know where to go or have the wherewithal to find the person who can give me the answers. And this is the sort of thing that would take care of that.
Absolutely. This is why we're bringing this to the table, because it's a full suite service for our clients and potential clients. They don't have to your point, do a Google search for the next 8 hours trying to find the right person. There's a trust factor here. We've already vetted this person. We've taken a lot of steps to make sure that there is not only our interests, but our clients' interests are at heart.
I've also been looking at my own taxes and how the new tax law is going to impact. How does getting a loan from you guys, what are the tax implications of that?
So there are, that's a great question for our CPAs to be able to help right. you in that, but that's a for majority of our business owners, our clients, it's a full write-off. The fees and the interest expense or the factoring expense, depending what type of product and service you're getting from us, is a full write-off for your company.
I see. Okay. And so another thing, since you're here, when I read your commercials, you talk about the fact that, you know, you're not tied to a monthly payment or that it's not a set monthly payment. And I think that's sort of an interesting sort of model. But I'm not sure I understand it.
So we've created a variable payment option, and what it does is when the business owner is very, very busy in their heart of their business season right now for the holidays, hopefully your business is doing great. Right. We can actually increase your payment back to us, so you pay at a higher velocity. And when you get slower, if you're a landscape company and you're not doing snow plowing, right. you're going to get slow in the winter season in the Midwest. So we realize that. So we're building a variant payment option for each client, so they're not basically put in one box that they have one payment a day or one payment a week or one payment a month, and it can't be a variance to it. We want to make sure that client is getting the best payment solution for them and okay. their business.
So tell me, who are your basic clients? Are they brand? I guess you wouldn't take on a brand new business because you want to show they need to show some a revenue source.
So we did recently launch a starter program and a new program for startup businesses, if you will. You have to be in business for 6 months.
Right.
Our standard program, you have to be in business for 1 year. For the standard program, you have to have a revenue of $10,000 a month. So sales of some sort, $10,000 a month. And the startup, you have to have $5,000 a month. So we're also really trying to help out the startup program businesses and get them going as well.
We talk a lot about startups on the show and the friends and family round where they're looking for people, you know, because it's, you might have a great idea, but if you don't have access to capital, it's not going to take off.
It will not take off. And at some point, friends and family are great, but the equity and the dilution schedules that start right. to happen start to get a little. So that's where we're able to.
My uncle's advice really isn't that good.
Right. No. Yeah. So, that's where we really try to help a lot of business owners, especially over 1 year, is I've done the equity thing. I've done the friends and family and raised it for our company and several companies prior to this. And it's great to have them. But if you could find a debt structure that works for you, the pricing makes sense for you, and you're in a growth or expansion mode or just adding to the business, if you can get the proper debt, that's the way to go.
All right. So I know if you're looking for capital, if you're a business in need of capital, check out Lender. But there's another thing. So, when I do my holiday shopping, I get a credit card at every store. Because you get 10% off, too.
Right, why not?
Is that a good idea?
I just did it at Home Depot. it's a good idea to a point. When you get one or two of them, then it's fine. When you get 20 or 30, it really does actually damage your credit.
But you say that when you do a check for Lender, that you call it a soft pull.
We call it a soft pull. So we actually pull a soft pull on your credit. It actually does not reflect or appear on your credit, so it doesn't ding you. So if you're sitting at a 700 FICO, and after your 37th credit card that you just took out,
right.
your FICO is now looking like 520.
Right.
So we want to make sure we don't do a hard pull on our client. We do a soft pull just to verify, and that's it.
All right, Tim Roach from Lender. Thanks for coming by. How do people find out more information?
They can go to lender.online. That's LENDR.online. Or they can give us a call at 312-319-1057.
Give me the number again.
It's 312-319-1057.
It's good to see you. Thanks
you
for coming
too.
By.
Have happy a great, holidays.
Happy holiday season. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Over the years, Chicago has gained the reputation as one of the best food cities in the country. And that's not just what the food magazines are saying, because take a look at our business scene too. Kraft Heinz built an entire food tech venture firm because of it, and they're growing their influence. A former Grubhub executive joined that team to help put the $100 million fund to good use. That team set to focus on logistic, tech, and e-commerce companies based around food that are disrupting the world around us in a good way. And the latest disruptor in the music industry in Chicago is the proposed Live Nation development at the Lincoln Yard site. This is a huge concern for a lot of local venues like the Hideout Chicago, Lincoln Hall, and the Empty Bottle, because the project will come with a radius clause, which is fairly common in the industry for larger venues. But what is it? It's a clause for bands that says if you play at Lincoln Yards, you can't play at another venue within a certain radius. And because of all of our venues, this would have a huge impact on the rest of the music scene. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. This is Steve Bertrand. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, on a phone line, I have representatives from two pretty cool groups in the city. One is the Village Center, and the other is Chicago Innovation. And much like peanut butter and chocolate, the two great groups are now working together on a pretty cool new program. Diane Campbell is on the phone line, as is Avery Stone Fish. Welcome, both of you, to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having us, Steve. We're excited to be here.
All right, so that's Avery. Avery, you start by telling me a little bit about Chicago Innovation. What is it you do?
Sure. So Chicago Innovation started back in 2002 as the Chicago Innovation Awards with only 75 people in attendance, and now it's grown to over 1,500 people who come to the Chicago Innovation Awards each year. And we also have year-round events and programs all aimed at educating, connecting, and celebrating innovators in Chicago, including our Women's Mentoring Co-op, our Chicago Student Invention Convention with K through 8th grade students, and a corporate startup matchmaking program where we aim to connect large corporations and startups. And now we're excited to launch a brand new program called the Ageless Innovators Program in partnership with the Village Chicago.
Yeah, I like that. Diane, tell me about the Village Chicago, because I'd not heard of this group before.
Well, I'm so glad you asked. The Village Chicago opened in 2009, and we exist to support the growth and well-being of people 50-plus. You know, we come together to have fun, make new friends, support each other as we navigate what we call the new longevity. And many Village members choose to stay in their own homes and enjoy intergenerational neighborhoods.
So the idea is that, so, you know, some people will move into a retirement community or whatever, but a lot of people don't. Most people, I would imagine, don't. And this is through the Village Chicago. This is the way for them to form community while staying in their own home.
Absolutely. And we offer a lot of services and expertise, social connections, engagements, and opportunities to make a difference. So, and we think that this program is going to make a great difference.
So, Avery, then, how does the Village Chicago feed the Chicago Innovation? How is it that the two of you are going to work together?
Yeah, absolutely. So Chicago Innovation will serve as the program manager for the Ageless Innovators Intergenerational Co-Mentoring Program. And it'll really be a great collaboration between Chicago Innovation and the Village Chicago, where we'll connect in terms of finding mentors for the program. And each of our 40 mentors in this first year of the program, and we believe there will be 40 mentors and zero mentees, so everyone will be mentoring each other. And each mentor will be gaining a Chicago Innovation membership and access to our events, as well as a Village Chicago membership and the ability to really connect with the other people in the Village Chicago community as well.
So, Diane, do you see the Village Center, the older, the baby boomers, helping the younger entrepreneurs, or do you see the younger entrepreneurs helping the older baby boomers?
Well, at the Village Chicago, we see it as very, very mutual. I mean, we absolutely believe that no that everybody, sort of no matter how old or how young, has something to teach and something to learn. And we really believe in the power of connecting the generations for mutual benefit. And it for sure is a key, one key to fulfillment and happiness in our longer lives.
Yeah, I know. I really like the idea of not just the mixing the generations, but just, you know, people meeting new people. And Avery, are all the mentors chosen, or if people are interested in this, or how does the process of it all work?
Yeah, great question. So our aim for this first year will be to have two cohorts of 20 mentors, 10 mentors from the older generation, 10 mentors from the younger generation, and many of them will be selected by our joint team. But then we'll also, right around January, be sending out a blast to our Chicago Innovation community, as well as the Village Chicago community, and you know, Chicago as a whole to apply and to be involved as a mentor of the Ageless Innovators Intergenerational Co-Mentoring Program.
I love the idea of it. And you tell me, how will you know? I mean, I'm confident it will be a success, but how will you measure? How will you know if you've succeeded here?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're right at the beginning of launching this program, and this is year one, so we're really in the process of figuring it out. But our goal is to really be communicating constantly with the mentors to be able to make sure that they're getting the best out of the program, and they're being able to really build a relationship, not only a relationship with their mentor pair, but also an intergenerational relationship with a whole community of people across generations that value the commitment and the insight and input from each of the members.
That's Avery Stonefish, the program manager at Chicago Innovation. Diane Campbell as well from the Village Center, I should say the Village Chicago. Thanks to both of you for joining us.